Hello and welcome to the Face of Pro-Life. Today I am speaking with Friar Isaac Haas from the Franciscan Friars of the Immaculate here in Griswold, Connecticut. Thank you so much for joining us today, Friar. So I wanted to hear a little bit about your background. I understand that you worked with the National Organization for Marriage, and I know we've had Brian Brown, who is now the, is he president or is he?
Back then he was, when I was working for them, he was the executive director.
Right, and he used to be here in Connecticut because we've had him on the show several times for the when he was the executive director for Family Institute of Connecticut, but he's since moved on.
That's right.
So could you tell us a little bit about what the National Organization for Marriage is?
Sure. Well, the National Organization for Marriage is an organization that is protecting marriage between one man and one woman, and also all the faith-based institutes and communities that sustain marriage. You know, when the National Organization for Marriage was starting, there was, you know, the people that were pushing for the quote-unquote gay marriage were getting a lot of headway, kind of through some tactics that they ended up adopting. NOM is the short name for the National Organization for Marriage. They were, kind of working on the lower levels of government, and they were picking particular areas where a win was kind of critical. And what they did was they ended up getting donations from all parts of the country in small donations and sending it to support their own politician, or they would just find a pro-family politician and just try to make his opposition win against him.
Mm.
And since the donations were very small, it wasn't raising any eyebrows.
Right, it's under the radar.
Exactly. And so they pour all this money into this particular area, and then after it was won, then they would come out and say, look what we did, you know, if you're
right.
a pro-family politician, look out, you don't want to, you know.
Mess with it, yeah, because people are against you, even
exactly.
though that they're not really claiming that they're anti-family.
Yeah, exactly.
How long ago did NOM start?
Actually, that's a good question. I don't know exactly how long ago it started. I was working with them during the beginning phase. They might even be considered still in the beginning phase now. I was working with them, 2 years ago from around March until about September. And at least in Philadelphia and in, I think, Rhode Island and Florida, they had just started up new offices. And
okay.
So it was really just still in the budding phase then.
But they've been, even though the NOM is very relatively new, they've been very successful.
That's right.
Could you tell us a little bit about some of the successes that NOM has had?
Well, about in California, how, they had the laws, marriage between one man and one mm-hmm. woman, and then the judges overturned it. And then, they encouraged Proposition 8 by informing, tons of people and getting them all to come out and vote. So Proposition 8's gone through. They just had a really, a really big win in Maine. Maine was considered to be kind of an easy win for those that are pushing the quote-unquote same-sex marriage. They figured it would be an easy win, and they thought it would kind of slow down the momentum of what's happening,
mm-hmm.
On the pro-family side. But, every single time, I think it's been 30 states so far, that have voted on this, and every single time it always comes out in favor of traditional marriage.
Right. So, like you say, 30 states have voted, have had on their ballot the initiative, whether or not to support homosexual marriage. And in every instance, traditional marriage has won out.
Yep.
So in California, traditional marriage won in the voting booth, the judges overturned it, but then the state came back and the people overturned the judges, in effect, by accepting an amendment saying that, marriage is between one man and one woman. So in Connecticut and Massachusetts, we never really had that opportunity because our state constitutions don't afford us the ability to put ballot initiatives on unless it's initiated by our legislators. We can't get, you know, a million signatures and say we want this on the ballot. And so Maine was really important for the opposition because they figured this, like you said, was an easy win. If they could get one state to vote gay marriage in, that would be a huge win for them.
Yeah.
So what you're saying is that the National Organization for Women was instrumental.
For marriage.
For marriage.
Yeah. National Organization for Marriage.
For marriage. Yeah, what did I say?
For women.
Oh. No, they weren't very helpful.
Yeah, yeah.
So National Organization for Marriage was very instrumental in affirming traditional marriage in the state of Maine. And that was just recently. That was just in November.
It was
the beginning of the month.
I think it was November 4th.
So what did they exactly do? What does National Organization for Women for Marriage actually how do they have, you know, get their success?
Sure. I mentioned they work on kind of the lower parts. They go state by state trying to pass it through in those particular areas. Just like how they were doing on the opposition on the other side, gathering donations from all parts of the country. NAM is gathering donations from all over the country and then focusing on a particular area. Mm-hmm. So, you know, every state, even foreign donations were coming
in. Wow.
For California. And we were putting all the money into that as we could to inform people. I personally think the information part was just huge. Because a lot of people, when they hear about, you know, marriage being under attack and the possibility of same-sex marriage, they often wouldn't be all that worried. But then once you start telling them the consequences of what might happen or what already is happening, mm-hmm. Through some of the articles that we were sending them, then it would start, you know, making them concerned, and they'd want to send in their money. But, you know, more important than them sending in their money is being concerned enough to tell others.
Right, and talk about it.
To talk about it, to sign, you know, put their signatures down for the proposition to come through. And, so I think that was a huge part of it.
Yeah, so information is really key because obviously the opposition has the media, the free press, to really get their message out, and obviously it's very easy for them to, you know, say that if you're against gay marriage, you're hateful, you know, just all the negative things, you're a bigot, you know, anything you can think of, they'll just throw nasty things at you. But like you say, once the people have the information in their hands, and that's what really is difficult, is getting it to them, because people are so inundated with information.
Yeah.
So what is the key information that you feel resonates with people? Because it really does. Once people do have the opportunity to vote for traditional marriage, they do. What is motivating people to support traditional marriage?
I think one thing was how it affects, I guess, you know, their religious beliefs. Say for example, there was a fertilization doctor in California who, I think I'm getting the story right, who had two lesbians come to her and they wanted to have, you know, a child. And the doctor actually had a policy even beforehand that she would only do the work with married couples, mm-hmm. for the sake of the children. And the doctor refused to do the work, really on that basis. These two women weren't married and
right.
She didn't want to go through with it. And she ended up being fined $10,000, which is, amazing.
And despite the fact that there are fertility clinics specifically geared towards homosexuals in California, and I know this for a fact.
Yeah.
So, you know, why don't they just go, to their... fertility clinics.
There's another one too. It was a photographer who they tried to hire her for a same-sex union, marriage or whatever, and the photographer said that she didn't want to do it, she or he, and the person even suggested other photographers
right.
that would be willing to do it, and she ended up getting sued.
So it's just vindictive.
You
not only do you have to accept me. You have to embrace my way of life, whether you like it or not.
Exactly.
I know in Massachusetts, as soon as they started accepting gay marriage, it became law of the state, and so kids had to learn about homosexual marriage in the classes as being, you know, the quote unquote a normal family, and it's just because it was law, it was accepted, and you couldn't even opt your kids out of these classes.
Yeah, exactly. I remember a case of a man who wanted to opt his kids out of the class, and again, I hope I'm recalling it correctly. It's been a while since I read it, but he brought it to the teacher, and the teacher said he couldn't opt out, and then he brought it to the school, and they said he couldn't opt out, and I think he even brought it to courts, and then ended up being against
right.
him.
Right, and the judge pretty much says, well, if you don't like it, you know, send your kid to private school.
Yeah.
Hello? The whole idea of having public schools so that everybody can afford to send their kids to school, because we're paying for it.
Yeah.
I know that the president's, one of his czars, I think it's the school safety czar or whatever, he is a openly gay man, and he was from Massachusetts, and he used school safety as a way to introduce homosexuality to kids, and that, you know, saying that, to keep homosexual kids safe, you know, you have to understand you can't bully them, and which is true. I mean, you don't want bullies for any reason, but to kind of get it in, you know, that way is just sneaky. And that's the whole agenda. It's not that people want to get married and live their lives. No, they want it in your face.
Yeah.
They want you to accept their behavior,
yeah.
whether they have to sue you to make you, photograph their civil union ceremony, or make the Knights of Columbus host their civil union, celebration. You know, it's really just a matter of how far are they going to go with this?
Yeah, I remember one thing that was just totally outrageous. And again, I hope I'm recalling correctly, and I think I am. In Denver, they passed a law, like an anti-discrimination law of sorts, that said there couldn't be discrimination according to restrooms. Where they couldn't even, they're all unisex restrooms. Public restrooms had to be unisex, which, you know.
So you can go whatever restroom you want.
Yeah.
Basically. So a pedophile can go in the little girl's room and find a victim.
Exactly.
So what else resonates with people? I mean, how do you combat the, you're just a bigot, you're a homophobe. How do you combat that? How is gay marriage bad for society?
Well, it's absolutely necessary for children to have both a mother and a father. I remember we were really focusing on that fact. You know, a lot of them would say, well, you know, these two women can be great mothers for this child, which, you know, one of them might be a great mother, but in reality, they can't be a good father.
Right.
You know, and of course, we all know this, you know, all the various problems that have ended up occurring with children that grow up without a father and without a mother. There's various problems that come from
that. I mean, the ideal for the building block for society is the family, the mother, father, and children. And if you already set it up as accepting, you know, a fatherless family or a motherless family, then you're already shortchanging the children, and you're just really handicapping the kids right at the start.
Yeah,
you know, it's not like we're saying, oh, you know, single families, you know, having a single family it's not illegal, but it's not the ideal.
Yeah.
We never said, oh yeah, this is ideal.
Yeah, exactly.
We strive for a whole family.
Yeah,
for the sake of the children and then. Is an extension society.
Yeah. I remember one thing that was really striking. This is a little off topic, but one of the things that I was doing was I was working with the mail. We were sending out gigantic mailings and getting tons of responses. And what was really striking was the amount of hate mail that came back.
Oh, really?
You'd I find it ironic that, you know, there's the group called the Californians Against Hate. But, you know, we're getting tons of hate mail, some really awful things that they're saying. And what's really interesting is once Proposition 8 was passed through, we ended up getting death threats.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, you're the ones being accused of being hateful. You're the ones being accused of, you know, inciting violence even.
Yeah.
And yet here it's you, or, you know, because they really don't have the truth behind them. They don't really have anything to stand on but, you know, name calling and threats.
Yeah.
So you, the National Organization for Marriage has been very successful. You know, I mean, for having a very small, really, organization to combat, you know, the Acorn and George Soros, who is definitely dumping money into California and Maine to support the opposition, mm-hmm. you really have overcome a lot.
Yeah. Absolutely.
That must have felt really good, you know. So you were with NAM during the Proposition 8.
Yeah, I actually was. I actually entered the friary September before
the election.
But no, it was a beautiful thing to be able to see that, you know, all the efforts that we were making. You know, in fact, what was really interesting, one of the things that. You know, the other side was doing was they're trying to really discourage everybody by suggesting that it's almost not a fight worth fighting because
right.
it's so obvious that they were going to win it. It's so obvious that the majority wants gay marriage. And but one thing that was really encouraging for us at the same time was we knew from the polls that the majority did want marriages between one man and
right.
one woman. And also to share that information with people was really, you know, is motivating for them. They went
out. You know, I'm sure the polls will always come out in favor of traditional marriage, but especially in the case of California, you never know who's going to get their voter base out. And you never know when people are just going to say, you know, I'm just sick of it.
Yeah.
You know, we've already voted. We already said no to gay marriage.
Yeah.
You know, and here, how many times are we going to have to say no? And so I just have a feeling that's the tack that they're going to take. You know, you keep chipping and pounding. It's like a little kid,
yeah.
you know, pestering his mom until the mom just, you know, breaks down and just says, all right.
Yeah.
So I just really, you know, commend the National Organization for Marriage that they're there and they're still fighting for traditional marriage.
Yeah.
And it sounds like they're expanding.
Yeah. Yeah, no, they're constantly growing from what I understand. Again, I haven't been there in quite some time, but the times that I've called back, my brother works for them and
oh, yeah.
I've spoken with him. And, you know, it sounds like they're just continuing to grow and expand and work in the different states.
And continue fighting for our traditional values.
Yeah.
Which is so important, you know,
yeah.
and like I say, if people don't keep up the fight, then, you know, we'll eventually lose. We'll just, you know, we'll just be worn down.
Yeah. The one thing that was interesting, too, is, you know, a lot of people would complain about, you know, why are you so worried about fighting against one form of marriage? Why don't you, you know, defend marriage, you know? But, you know, the Maggie Gallagher, the founder of the National Organization for Marriage actually already has an institute that's defending, not defending rather, but promoting and healthy marriages. But she saw that it was so important to defend marriage because at the time, and you know, I think she's completely right. She saw that if something wasn't done very soon, that marriage, as she would always say, as we know it, would
be
gone.
Yeah.
And it really seems like they stepped in just in time to prevent that from happening.
Well, I mean, we have cheapened marriage over the last several decades, totally. You know, with the advent of birth control and no-fault marriage, and I mean, just really a lot of things that have chiseled away at the sanctity of marriage. And it was very insightful for her to see this coming. you know, because I don't think anybody really saw all of these states, you know, being subjected to, you know, even the idea of having it on the ballot. What do you mean?
Yeah.
We have to vote for traditional marriage.
Yeah.
So that is amazing that she had the insight to see that we really needed to fight against the tide.
Absolutely.
I know that in Connecticut, like I said, we really never had the opportunity. You know, I know Family Institute of Connecticut was in other groups were on the forefront of trying to prevent gay adoptions.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the things, you know, they were fighting for, because I think they thought that if they didn't get the gay adoptions, that was their first stepping stone as far as, well, we can't adopt because we're not married.
Right.
So, but they got the adoption, and they still said that we don't have all the rights of marriage, and they got the civil unions, and they said, well, we still don't have the word, you know, and so they kept chipping away in Connecticut, and yet the people in Connecticut never got the opportunity to say anything.
Yeah. It's, you know, like you were saying, they keep trying to push further and further. It almost, you know, I thought of the idea that it's almost like avoiding the near occasion of conscience rather than the near occasion of sin. And you know, it seems like they just want to do away with everything that's, absolutely everything that's in opposition to what they're doing. I was actually, I heard that in Connecticut, just recently kind of a chance to be able to do it was passed, and it won't be really a chance to do it for another 9 years or something like that.
Yeah, what happened in Connecticut was in the Constitution of Connecticut, there is a process that you can put to the voters whether or not they want a constitutional convention.
Mm-hmm.
A constitutional convention, if voted for, if passed, would have allowed people to get together and say, okay, we want these things put in the Constitution. Now, it would have to have been by amendment, which means one of the things we wanted to do is to have the ability to get things on the ballot, mm-hmm. you know, to get referendums. And so they would have written it up that we amend the Constitution to say that, you know, if you get X amount of signatures and it's okay by the legislation, we have the right to put this on the amendment. Well, even that amendment would have had to have been voted on, whether or not people wanted to have that ability to get call referendums.
Yeah.
And ironically, people from out of state, mostly like the National Education Association, teachers unions, things like that, were dumping tons of money into Connecticut to fight against the Constitutional Convention.
Really?
And I know for the first time I heard the bishops in Connecticut were actually for the Constitutional Convention, and it did not pass. You know, I think people voted against it out of either being lied to or just plain ignorance. They didn't understand what it meant, and they were told that, well, teachers were going to lose money and we're going to lose all sorts of rights and stuff like that, and that was just, it was just plain ridiculous. We just wanted to have the same rights as many of the other states, like you say, 30 of them, to be able to put things on a call to referendum. And frankly, the people fighting against traditional marriage were at the forefront because they knew that was one of the motivations.
Yeah.
That we would have been able to do what California did, and that would be to amend our state constitution to say that marriage is between a man and a woman.
Yeah.
So it was...
Is there anything really that can be done between now and 9 years from now when the next chance for, you know, or is not really?
Not to my knowledge.
Not to my knowledge.
And I guess, you know, one of the things that they did do after the court overturned the civil unions, basically what they said was civil unions isn't good enough, we have to have gay marriage. The legislators did get together to write it into law. They had to hurry and get it, you know, make sure it was on the books as law.
Yeah.
And in doing so, that gave us the opportunity to get into the law that priests or other religious would not be forced to participate in gay marriage if that was against, you know, the tenets of their faith.
Yeah.
And so had they not opened that up the legislature for this law and left it as the courts had demanded, then there was the opportunity for, like, instead of photographers being sued, then priests or, you know, people from other faiths being attacked because they wouldn't support a gay marriage.
Yeah.
So it does have implications. You know, it's not hateful that you don't want openly gay people to be married. It's just not good for society.
Yeah.
And it's not good for them, frankly. I mean, as Catholics, we know that that's not going to help somebody get to heaven.
Yeah.
You know, that lifestyle is not going to help them.
Yeah.
And if we stood back and said, you know, that's how you feel, that's fine.
Yeah.
Then that would be hateful.
Yeah.
That would be hateful.
Absolutely. You know, I was thinking about the fact that, you know, this is kind of like the, you know, ultimate consequence of the selfish culture of the contraceptive mentality. And as I was thinking to myself, especially like here in Connecticut, since there's not really much to do as far as, you know, passing laws or whatever, you know, what could be done to kind of, combat the whole culture of death.
Culture, right.
You know, because ultimately, again, you know, I remember Father Angelo was on here before and he was explaining that, you know, it ultimately is about a culture. You know, if the culture is unhealthy, then you're going to have, terrible consequences,
right.
Like abortion, like contraception.
Divorce rates.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, and, along with what Brian had been, what Nam was doing, trying so much to inform, but in particular of taking note of what the other side is doing and trying to employ what they're doing, but, you know, in the opposite sense.
Right.
I remember after Proposition 8 went through, there were a whole bunch of organizations that were being boycotted and they were losing all kinds of money. So Nam started something called the Boycott, which, you know, was a great idea. They were gathering lists of people that were being boycotted and putting them out there for people of goodwill to go and buy from, you know. And I was even thinking kind of on a local level that could be done to help culturally, you know, the places that are not selling contraceptives, to encourage, maybe even make a list of people that would be willing to buy from a place that wasn't contraceptive.
That's right.
And then
influence somebody to be like that.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. You know. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. We hope that you've learned something. We hope that you talk to your family and friends about the things that you learned and uphold traditional marriage in the United States. And we hope when you look in the mirror the next time, you realize yours too is the face of pro-life. Join us again next time.